Hello and welcome to the Black Ladder podcast, a collection of conversations with interesting Black individuals who not only do amazing work but are consciously helping others to climb the career ladder too. Whether it's music or medicine, fashion or farming, tech, science or the creative arts, we'll be sitting on my sofa talking about what they do, how they got there, lessons learned along the way and what being Black in their workplace means to them. I'm your host Ife, bringing you Life Without the L. Hope you're comfy. Let's get to it. Today's guest is Dr. Efosa Uwobamwen. Efosa is currently a full-time model whose career started whilst he was studying for his general medicine degree in Czech Republic. He was scouted after a friend of his saw him in some nightclub photos on Facebook. Efosa is a fashion model, and one of the highlights he tells us about is his casting with the one and only Donatella Versace. Travel is a big part of his job, and he gives us a great insight into what it's like to travel all over the world as a Black model. On this week's episode, we talk about agencies, castings, being self-employed, handling rejection, health, and juggling a full-time job whilst studying. So, welcome to the Black Ladder podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So, guys, it's super early. Well, okay, it's early for some millennials. It's like 10 a.m. and it's still lockdown mode. So we are recording this whilst also adhering to kind of semi-social distancing rules. We're both in like our own separate homes and yeah. We're recording via the internet, which is great. But hopefully next week, I think Boris will let us out.
Fingers crossed.
So I'm super excited to have you on the podcast. You were obviously someone who was like one of the first few people on my roster to like come to for this podcast. So I think what we'll do though is we're going to get to know you, because I always say this and it's quite cringy, but everyone doesn't know you like I know you and the rest of your friends and family know you. So it'll be great to get to know you.
Of course.
So let's start with a quick fire round. Okay. There's only a few questions. They're very brief. And the first one is, what's your name?
My name is Dr. Efosa Uwobamwen.
Nice. Okay. Next question. What's your job title?
I'm currently modelling full-time.
What motivates you? Tough question, right?
Yeah, I think the desire to create a better life for myself and those around me.
Great answer. Yeah. Love it. Okay. Now, let's rewind back a little bit. Let's think back to when you were a little bit younger, maybe age between 4 and 11. What did you want to be when you were younger?
Oh, I think medicine has always been some like floating around. My dad is a doctor, so I think that influenced me from quite a young age. I always saw it as an option, at least. But I think like most young boys around that age, I just wanted to be a footballer until I was about 12 or 13, probably.
Ooh, okay. So then what was your first ever job? Like, what was a job that you earned money from? First job in your life?
My first job was working at the Manchester United megastore. back then it was the Nike store. I was 17 and I worked there for about a year and a half.
Nice. Did you enjoy that?
I loved it. I think I just loved the fact that I had my own money and that it was free. I bought my first car with my earnings from that job. Nice. Things like that.
So tell us a little bit about your education. It'll be great to know maybe around what A-levels you did and then, you know, what university, what degree. Just, yeah, tell us a brief overview of your all the education you've had in your life.
So I did my GCSEs and A-levels. And for A-level, I did chemistry, biology, and economics.
Very difficult subjects.
I mean, you don't really have a choice if you're considering medicine on biology and chemistry. And the third one people usually go for is maths, but I have an aversion to maths, definitely A-level. so I was trying to avoid that. And I loved economics. I found it so interesting. And I still find it very interesting. So that was kind of the thought process behind that.
So then I'm guessing you did those A-levels and you, I guess, got accepted into a university.
So I was a bit of an indecisive child, I guess. At that stage, I was struggling to decide what exactly I wanted to do, partly due to self-confidence and a lack of it, and partly just because there were just so many options on the table and so many different people were saying they were doing so many different things. So at the time, I was a bit worried about that I wouldn't get into med school. So I decided to apply for natural sciences. So that is actually what I applied for initially during my A levels. During the summer leading up to results day, I started to have second thoughts, basically. I wasn't really sure if that's what I actually wanted to do. I wasn't sure what I was going to do afterwards. So I started looking for options to apply for medical school either the following year or that same year. And that's what happened in the end, eventually. I found a med, with the help of my parents, I found a med school that was accepting submissions through an entrance exam. And I applied. So this is maybe July, August. And by September, I left for the Czech Republic.
Wow.
Yeah.
Gosh. So what was the title of the degree you were studying? And
I studied general medicine.
General medicine.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the next quickfire question is all about salary. But I'm going to put it to you a different way. What I'd like to know, and what I think is interesting to find out, is all about as a full-time model, what's the starting salary and what's the highest you've heard a full-time model can earn?
It's a bit difficult to say because at the end of the day, all models are self-employed. So your actions, your decisions, more or less determine the way that your career unfolds. Models have like a base day rate and it can increase exponentially. There's really no cap on how much you can earn in one day, depending on if you are Naomi Campbell or Gigi Hadid, etc.
They supplement that with doing campaigns and like advertising, possibly doing social media campaigns in other ways as well, so it doesn't always have to be.
Yeah, I mean, social media has opened up a lot of new doors and given a lot of power to the model as opposed to the agency, as it was previously. You were reliant on your agency to get you all of your work. If they decided to, for whatever reason, blacklist a person, that person could not work in the industry. Mm-hmm. But now social media has put the power back into the hands of the actual model, so they can organize their own brand deals and negotiate their own contracts outside of traditional modeling work.
Do they have monthly rates, or is it usually just a day rate? You go to a shoot and that's what you get, or do they have like you're on contract for a month and you get paid X amount? You might have 2, 7 or shoots in that. Does that ever happen, or is it just usually a day rate?
More often than not, it's a day rate. So anything from 1,000 a day up to can be 60,000 plus in a day.
Wow.
You know, it really depends on the usage, which client you're working for, what market you're working in. All of those are kind of factors that contribute to the eventual rate for each model.
Wow. Okay. And now the final question of the quickfire round. What is your favorite color?
Interesting. I might have to say grey. I do like grey clothes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, so that's the reason, because of clothes. You tend to dress in grey outfits?
Not really. I mean, but I do like having grey clothes. It's really difficult to describe.
Yeah. No, that's good. It's your favourite colour. You'd have to own that. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Okay. That's the end of the quickfire round, and I guess we should move on to get into the real detail. Is that good?
Yes, please. I understand.
Let's go. We're back. We are going to talk about Afosa's career ladder, which I'm super excited to hear about because it's one that I don't really know anything about per se, but I think it's very interesting. And I'm just going to let us get straight into it rather than me talk. So
sure.
I'll let you take the stage. And why don't you start where you feel comfortable? Because on one hand, I want to say start at the end of your degree, but I know that your career started before that. So
yeah, it did.
Let's go.
So in terms of modelling, I was in maybe my third year of uni. I was 20 when I was first scouted. And it was through a friend of a friend. I think she saw my photos in some nightclub photos, actually, on Facebook. And she contacted me through my friend and just asked if I was interested in modelling, if that was something that I'd considered before. And at the time, I remember I was really busy with uni, so I wasn't that interested. It just wasn't really the direction that I was thinking in at that time. So I turned her down. I said no. And I kept on saying no for about a year in total. She kept on messaging me periodically saying, have you thought about it? Like, there's a shoot coming up. Would you be interested? But I just kept on saying no. And so eventually I said yes. and that's where it really all started. She introduced me to my mother agency, which is in Slovakia. Mm-hmm. That's still my mother agent till this day. Oh. And yeah, I started essentially building a career, like doing shoots here and there between, in my free time, because at that time in uni, it was really, I did have a lot of exams happening. Around third year is really crunch time. You are learning a lot and like, the turnover of information is really high. So it was quite a lot to balance at once. Mm.
Could you tell us possibly about your first ever job? That one, because I know you mentioned that you said there's a shoot coming up at like the weekend after, but was that the first one or was it another shoot?
So my first, none of these initial ones were paid. They were more to kind of get me feeling comfortable on camera and also so the agency and my agent could have an idea of how I looked on camera, how I presented, like how I interacted with a photographer, that kind of thing. My first ever job was for a magazine. I actually can't even remember the name of the magazine right now. but it was for a Slovak magazine. And it was with one other girl and a photographer who I'm friends with to this day as well.
Wow. So yeah. I'm guessing you're pretty good at keeping up relationships and like communicating with people. Is that something you feel that's like necessary in your industry and your work?
Honestly, I wouldn't say that I'm the best at it. I think I have a lot of room for improvement there. but I do think it's essential for any self-employed person, anybody kind of running a business based on themselves, to be a good communicator.
Hmm. Okay, so you've done a few, you know, test shoots, you've done a few jobs. Do you tell your parents about this? What do they think? Do they think, oh, it's just maybe a part-time job? Were they, like, super supportive? Or they were like, we'd rather you focus on your degree?
So I think it was mostly, more than anything, when I look back on it now, I think it was just fear on their part. They just felt like, he's put so much into this degree and we've sacrificed so much to have him be doing this degree. And now comes along this distraction, which is not really anything relevant. It's not very important to that. Like that's how they saw it. Which I can't really blame them for because I might feel the same if I was in their position and I had their understanding of the situation. But I think it definitely grew on them, the idea of it. And when I showed to them that it wasn't something that I was using to distract myself, it was something that I was building towards, they started to feel a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah. Okay. How much time were you putting towards being a model? Was it on your weekends? Did you have to go to like evening? Because obviously, I guess doing general medicine at university is very intense, right? You know, so when did you have, how did you balance your time between studying and modelling?
So in the initial stages, it wasn't too intense in terms of how much modelling work I was getting. So it really was a snowball. Like it did kind of creep up on me. I mean, in the initial stages, it was really okay. Maybe once a week, I would have to go during the week to my agency. Maybe not even once a week, some months, to take new Polaroids or like Polaroid updates, and to cast for jobs, or maybe to actually, I'd actually have to take a day off during the week to do a job, that kind of thing. But apart from that, it was mostly weekends, and I would study on the bus, I would study on the train. After a couple of years, maybe like fifth year, when I was getting really busy with actually flying for work, I was studying a lot on flights and at airports. But at the time, I didn't really see it as anything super special. I just really needed to do the work. But I also wanted to do the job. So I just kind of made it work. And obviously having really good supportive friends helped, who would take notes for me or update me on things that were happening at uni and that I need to be aware of, or things that I should be applying for. Like anything that might have slipped my mind while I was doing all this madness.
That's very true. I guess you just had two priorities, and like anyone else, you were just juggling them and making sure
exactly
it was balanced. Let's rewind back a little bit. I'd love to know about your move, because you were in the UK, you got this admission, and then you kind of up sticks and moved countries to you moved to go and do a degree. So there's a few things I'd love to unpack in there, because first of all, first question is, in what language was your degree taught in?
The entire degree was taught in English.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
But next question, you're living in Czech. How are you feeling? Were you anxious? Were you nervous? Were you excited? What was going through your head at this time when you knew you were moving countries? And I don't know, I guess, had you lived away from home? Were you in boarding school or anything before that? Or was this your first time of like leaving the country?
No, I was more than excited, beyond excited. I couldn't even really put it into words. As an 18-year-old, I was moving country and had the opportunity to study medicine and live in my own apartment. And that in itself was just exciting enough for me. It wasn't really until I got there that I really started to... I mean, I had an idea of what it might be like being the only black person in a particular place, but I'd never really experienced it growing up in Manchester from birth. So I'd always been around black communities, specifically Nigerian communities. So it wasn't an experience that I was really prepared for, and definitely not something I was used to. But I think it made me grow up really quickly. It made me look at life through a slightly different lens.
And did you learn to speak
Czech? Yeah, I still speak Czech.
Wow.
I wouldn't say very well anymore. I'm just a bit out of practice, but...
Did you have classes in that, or was that just through friends? How did you go about doing that?
So for the first 4 years of the degree, we had compulsory Czech classes weekly. And that's just in order to, firstly, integrate into society, that you're in a place that you're living for 6 years, but also to speak, to communicate with patients in the hospital.
Yes, of course.
So that's actually really important. The most important part of the degree, because when you're getting into the later years, you really do need to be able to interact with all of your patients in a way to give them effective care.
So I'd love to talk briefly about the degree, because I have a feeling that it's a very different degree to the UK degree, because medicine in the UK, is it 4 or 5 years?
It's 5.
And in Czech, it's 6.
Six years. Yeah.
So what does it entail? And like, what would you say the difference is? Because I'm guessing the first few years you're studying and the last few years you're in hospital doing like placements. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So the Czech model of medical education is very similar to the traditional British one, mm-hmm. in the sense that it's split into theory years and practical years. So the first 3 years of the degree, you are not in the hospital. You're just learning theory in classrooms, things like anatomy, biochemistry, biophysics, physiology. Those are all the subjects you're doing in from years 1 to 3. And from years 4 to 6, you are hands-on in the hospital learning about clinical subjects. And essentially, the first 3 years set the stage for the final 3 years.
Yeah.
That model is still followed in some medical schools in England. Just there's a shift away from it now.
Mm. Why is that? I understand that was a very off key question, yeah. But why is that, do you think? Why are they shifting away from that model?
I think they just understood that there might be a better way of learning. There might be a better way to train doctors. If you are in doing practical things from day one, that means by the time you graduate, you have 5 years of practice, mm-hmm. interacting in a clinical environment, which at the end of the day, that's the end goal.
Yeah.
So it does make sense.
I definitely agree with that. You know, I'm sure a lot of people, a lot of subjects in this country would say, everything I learned to university wasn't exactly what I was doing in real life.
No.
at all. And it's like, something that always comes to my mind is no one actually teaches you how to do your own taxes. Like, no. I guess I know because I'm an accountant, but these are practical things. You know, people say in life that two things are certain, death and taxes. But no one in school gets to learn about taxes. No. We're learning Pythagoras' theorem. I don't know when last I used that.
No.
So we're going to flip back now and go back into your full-time modelling career. And we'd love for you to tell us a bit more about that. So I guess one of the topics I'd like to talk about is rejection.
Mm.
I don't know if you've handled rejection. Maybe you've just been going successfully
cruising through.
I don't know. But tell us a little bit. Have you handled rejection and what format has it come in?
Yes, I think that's one of the things I'm most grateful for, actually. A combination of failing exams at med school and suffering rejection in the modelling industry at different stages have both made me, have toughened me, basically, in a sense. I just think modelling is such a fickle industry. It's difficult to say who's going to fail and who's going to succeed. So you really have to have that drive from within. You really have to believe in yourself and your ability and what you stand for and where you see yourself going. Mm. Without that, it's a really, really difficult industry to stay in.
True.
Because there's always someone new, there's always someone more interesting, there's always someone who you might feel is better than you or is taller than you or has done X more jobs than you. Mm. So it really has to start from within.
You have to be accepting of your own,
yeah,
how you are, what you can offer. So what are you, like, are there any practical coping mechanisms you can offer?
I think it starts from separating yourself from the rejection. Mm-hmm. You have to understand that they're not rejecting you as a person. They're not rejecting EFOSA. They're rejecting the model that they don't need for this particular job. They might need you for the next job. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So every single job has a different brief. And if you don't fit the brief, you don't fit the brief.
Mm.
That doesn't mean you can't be a model. That doesn't mean you're not going to be successful. It just means today, for this job, for this specific client, you're not what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. I loved how you said that for this package they need for today isn't what's you are today, but doesn't mean you're not for the next one. That's really good advice, actually. And it's probably advice that can be taken not just in modeling, for everything. Like if you get rejected from a banking job, you know, it wasn't you weren't the person for that doesn't mean you're not the person for another one.
Exactly.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about agents, agencies, management. Tell us about that world. How does that work? You know, what happens there? Does everyone have to have an agent when you're a model? Or do people tend to, is there anyone who just does it on their own? Like, not wings it, but says, you know, I will represent myself.
Yeah. There are a few, like a handful of people, mostly who are active on social media, who chose to go like the route with to represent of self-representation.
Mm-hmm.
But you really have to be sure that you know what you're doing, because you could leave a lot of money on the table or get yourself into other legal issues if there's not no framework to protect you. The majority of models who are working full-time, the vast majority, I would say 99%, are agency signed and represented. Because that's simply what most people know. It's the easiest way to do things. They do take a commission, but honestly, considering the amount of legwork you would have to do by yourself, the commission is worth it, in my opinion.
So how do you go about signing up for an agency? Because I know you said your first one was through a friend. Have you had any other agencies? Because I know you called it the mother.
My mother agency,
Does that mean you have auntie agencies?
Good joke. it was. So your mother agency can be based anywhere. In fact, they don't even have to be based anywhere. They can be online. Okay. It can just be one person in a room. And their job is to direct and manage your career. Like that's their entire job. They can also book you jobs directly, but mostly they will be placing you, especially if they're an agency in a small market, or like I said, just somebody in a room somewhere. They will aim to place you with larger agencies in varying markets. So for instance, London is a market, Paris is a market, New York is a market. So as they place you in those markets, they are able to, each of the agencies, those in New York and Paris and London, they find you jobs within those cities with clients who are based in those cities.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm such a geek, but they're kind of like a mothership. Is that what I was going to say?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mothership.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So earlier when we were talking, you mentioned self-confidence. You said the reason you weren't too sure what you wanted to do was you were maybe struggling with a little bit of self-confidence. From that time to when you started doing modelling, I'm guessing you improved your self-confidence. How did you do it? Because obviously modelling requires... I think it requires a lot of self-confidence. Would you agree?
It requires you to present the appearance of self-confidence. You don't necessarily have to be confident. I think of myself as quite a shy person, generally speaking. But I think I just found, in modelling, I found something that it didn't always come completely naturally to me from the start, but I saw the potential in myself to do well in it. So it was something that I pursued and I decided to work on and invest my time in, because I really believed that it was something that I could be good at.
True.
And I could make a career of.
And how do you keep up your modeling skills in general? Because like any role, any job in life, you need to keep up with the industry, keep up with the market. What does that mean to you? I guess in a modelling sense, how do you keep up with what's... And I don't mean keep up like in keeping up with the Joneses. I more mean like, how do you stay relevant and up to date? How do you make sure you're doing the right jobs or, you know, doing what you...
That's a bit of a tricky one, because you can't change who you are. You are who you are. And nowadays, modelling isn't just about how you look. It's also about personality. It's also, as in any industry, especially in self-employed industries, the work you do is the work you will do more of. So I think that's the biggest thing when deciding which jobs to take and which jobs not to take. Just kind of making sure that if the next job you take is going to be the same as the next 10 jobs after that, would you be happy to do that job 10 times?
Okay.
That's how I think make decisions.
So just from my own knowledge, what sort of different jobs are there in the industry? In my head, this is what I know. So
yeah,
I could be very wrong, but there's like hand modeling or foot modeling or body modeling or maybe hair modeling. Is there that kind of split in that in your industry, and like which one have you gone down the path of?
I mean, it's fashion modeling as a whole is just fashion modeling. It's completely different to kind of hair, hand, that kind of thing. Although like fashion models can get beauty campaigns, and those are actually some of them, or fragrance campaigns. Those are some of the most lucrative jobs that you can get. But at the same time, there's not necessarily a split. It's just when your career reaches a certain level and when you have a certain level of visibility, it makes sense for a fashion house to use you as a fragrance model.
Just to tie in the brand a bit more.
Almost as if you've earned it by reaching a certain level in your career.
Yeah. So you're into fashion modeling is what your path is?
Yes.
Okay. And did you pick that, or was that just what you fell into?
A little bit of both. I think doing fashion modeling, there are quite strict criteria. Nowadays they're less strict, but you have to be a certain height, you have to be like have certain measurements, otherwise you can't really fit the clothes, that kind of thing. So I guess there's the elements of luck in that, in being able to be a fashion model in the first place. But it's also something that I'm interested in. I do, like, regardless of whether I was working in fashion, I would still probably watch the shows and look at the images and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So it interests you and you're, you know, you...
Exactly.
You're
yeah.
involved in it. So I guess my next question would be, I'd love to hear about, if you can, any of the past ones, I guess, maybe you can talk about. What are the interesting shoots you've done? You know, what's the interesting campaigns or, you know, people you've worked with?
Yeah.
What's been interesting? What's been the highlight, I guess?
The highlight I always say is when I met Donatella Versace.
Oh, wow.
In Milan.
Great person, great country.
Yeah. So it was 2016, and it was my first show season. So I did London, then Milan, then Paris.
Wow.
In the summer. And the way it's done, it's back to back. So literally you stay in London for something like 10 days, and then all the models fly to Milan, then they're there for a while, then everyone flies to Paris. And then there's the way the schedule was back then, there was a gap, and then New York Fashion Week, which was in July. So I was in Milan, and I went to a casting for the Versace show. And the casting was held at the Versace mansion in Milan.
Oh my goodness.
So as you can imagine, this was my first real experience So I started modeling 2015. This is 2016. So this is my first real experience going to Fashion Week and like being around this many other models. And you can imagine how intimidating that was to me at that time. All these people seem so much more experienced than me. And like they were saying, oh yeah, I've done this show. Or I was here last year. Or I did this job with this person. And at that point, I really didn't have much to my name, or at least I felt like I didn't. And I think that was probably the most exciting experience I've had to date. She was so nice. Really welcoming. Yeah, she's the most lovely person. Made everyone feel so welcome and like they were important.
So
the house is amazing.
So you went into the house, talk us through, and then like... I don't know, was there like a, did someone come and get you and say, she will see you now? Like, was it big room?
So initially, the first time I went, it was just the casting. Mm-hmm. So I signed in downstairs. They're used to having models that in and out of there all the time because they cast there twice a year, or maybe even more than twice a year for both men's and women's fashion week. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you sign in, you leave your ID at the front desk or whatever, and then I went upstairs and I waited in the room, and then the casting directors asked to see you first. So you walk for them. They asked to see your book. They asked for like a show card, which is essentially a business card with your massive picture of your face on it. and then you walk for them. They watch you walk and decide if they would like to have you for a callback or a fitting to decide if you will eventually be in the show. Fortunately, that time I was called back, and yeah, the next time I was in the Versace mansion, which was a few days later, that's when I met Donatella.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's crazy. You know, I actually thought, I don't know what I thought. I thought it'd just be like really intense, like security would be really hard. And I thought there'd be like 20 stages before you ever even met her. Do you know what I mean?
And that's probably what it should be like, but she's just so lovely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My gosh. Okay, so you've touched a little there about some of the places you've traveled to, but where else have you traveled to? Where has your job taken you?
So I spent a lot of time last year in New York, and also on the West Coast of America. But apart from that, all through Europe, I've been to some of the tiniest, like most obscure places that I would have never even heard of or thought of. For work, like all across Europe, really. Yeah.
Okay. It would be really nice, I guess, to know. I think you've touched on it a little earlier, but how do you decide on what projects to do and work on? So you mentioned that, you know, if you do one, it might mean that you'll do 10 of something similar to it.
Yeah.
But how do you decide? Do you even get a choice? I'm sure you do, but. Or does your agency say, this? We think this is going to be really good for you, for your career, go with this one, and you're like, thinking about it. How does that decision get to be made?
So for me, the decision is exposure, who the client is, and how much they're paying. Mm-hmm. Those are probably the three criteria which I hold, which I look at most closely. Mm. If I'm really completely unsure, I guess, for instance, if the money is the same and the exposure is the same and it just comes down to picking one, then I'll ask my agent, my mother agent, which one she thinks is best for me, and I'll just go with that.
You mentioned who the client is. How would that, how would that differ? Do you know what I mean? Do you look at the client and say, maybe I don't like what they stand for, or is it like...
100%. There are definitely clients who I would just say right off the bat that I'm not interested in working for because of whatever kind of views they've expressed in the past. I don't feel like I need money from you.
Mm,
yeah. As simple as that.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to even put yourself yourself as a representative of them, I guess, either.
No.
Yeah. This is a very random question, but how does a mother agent, how do they contact you? Do they call you, email you? Do you ever go and visit them, like maybe once a year? Because obviously they can be anywhere, and like you mentioned, they might be online.
Some people have never met their mother agents. You don't really need to, but while I was at university, I would visit my mother agency quite frequently.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously now she's still based in Slovakia, and it's just not feasible.
Mm-hmm.
But when she travels or when she goes to other cities and I'm available, I'll of course make myself available and we'll go for lunch. Sure.
What's the turnaround time you have on some of your jobs? Because I feel like when I first contacted Afosa, it was kind of like, he was like, I'm on a flight. I'll call you when I jump off the flight. And I was like, oh, are you sure? I hope you're not going to be tired. He was like, no, it's cool. And like, yeah. Like, what's the turnaround time? Because I'm guessing Can there be a time where they call you in the morning and say you need to be on the flight by 4 p.m.?
Yeah. Yeah, that could easily happen. It doesn't happen often. And usually you'd have like some kind of idea that there is a job coming up. But sometimes there's just no warning. Like, there's absolutely no warning. And it's either take the job or someone else takes the job. And that's really up to you. Mm-hmm. No one's going to force you.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like I've said like 3 or 4 times already, you are self-employed. Any money you lose is money you've lost. Yep. That's it.
True. Okay, so we're getting to the end of some of my questions for this side of things, but I'd love to know a little bit about your health and exercise. And I never really asked this, but recently for me, during this COVID times, I've realized there's so much more I can do to like get my body right, and not even my body right, but just feel better within myself.
Yeah.
For example, I'm a pro vitamin guy. I've always been, but like I've now started ordering vitamins that are liposomes instead of like effervescent, because this one's going to your cells better. I'm like doing all sorts. How are you approaching it? Because the COVID has really shown me that not just me, but I think we all need to really take care of ourselves and our bodies, because I think they drive your mind. What's your view on health and well-being? And how does it relate to your job, possibly?
My view on health and well-being is that it's an incredibly underutilized medication that people should really be paying more attention to. Mm-hmm. I think what struck me was, in my final year of university, I was studying for my public health final exam. Mm-hmm. And it just dawned on me that so many chronic health conditions can be prevented just from making sure that you exercise frequently and are careful about what you put into your body in terms of food or other substances. There's so much that we can do before it gets to the point of having to reverse or treat a condition like diabetes.
Mm.
I think this new age of, largely driven by social media, which is like this new, like these fit communities and online workouts and just like a general push for health, is only a positive thing. It can only be a positive thing. It just comes down to information and where you get your information from, and making sure that you're not being misinformed or kind of duped into buying random products that aren't actually helpful.
Definitely. And I'm guessing you're into exercise. I only know this because I'm not going to say stalked, but I just kind of saw that you had like this exercise thing going on. I think you had like it on your live, right?
It was for Boys by Girls magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're an exercise person then?
It's just been a genuine part of my life for the past 10 years. And so I started going to the gym when I was about 15. I never really stopped. It's just always something I've been really interested in and something I invest a lot of time teaching myself about and understanding.
Yeah. How would you say your medical degree has lended a hand to modelling? Are there any skills you've picked up in either or actually, even maybe going the other way around, where maybe you've picked up communication skills when you're modelling, or maybe you've picked up skills about, you know, I don't know, like being healthy when you're in medicine that's lended a hand to the other?
I mean, definitely in terms of exercise, I think studying medicine has helped, because you just have a better understanding of everything that you're doing and what you shouldn't be doing and when to stop and when to push. Like, those basic understandings are at the core of exercise science. Yeah. In terms of like the parallels that I would draw between the two kind of worlds or career paths, I think attention to detail is my biggest one. Because obviously in different ways, there are different things at stake in each case. but both in the creative industries and in medicine, attention to detail is paramount.
Yep.
Like the changes in... you move a decimal place in medicine, a patient dies or a patient lives. And you choose this color instead of that color for this I don't know, show card or album cover or whatever you're creating, a different audience is drawn in. So it's just something as small as that, an attention to detail in both sectors, I think can be really powerful.
Yeah. Wow. This is great. So we're back and we're going to talk about being black, which Afosa and I both are. And we're going to talk about how being black has affected his career as a full-time model. So my first question I'm going to ask you, how has being black affected your career as a full-time model?
It's really difficult to think of any really positive ways that it might have affected. I'm sure there are, but it just tends to be the negative experiences that stick in your mind. But one thing I would say is that I did feel like I was constantly reminded, especially in back in maybe 2015, 16, 17, that I am a black model. I'm not just a model. And there was almost this unspoken distinction between the two. Black models don't do these kind of jobs. These are what black models do: sportswear. They work for JD Sports, and then they're happy for the money they earned, and that's it.
Wow.
That was just what people saw black models as. That's what they thought they were good for. That's where agencies thought they could make money from black models.
Yeah.
And so that's what was perpetuated.
When we talk about, and when you think about shoots that you've done in the past, have you ever been the only black person on a shoot?
Countless times, most times.
How has that made you feel?
To be honest, I don't think any black person growing up in the UK would feel uncomfortable being in a room full of people who are not of colour, because that's how their whole life has been.
True.
Most of us went to schools, or a lot of us went to schools in areas where there were 2-3 black people. In my secondary school, I was one of 4 black people. There you go. So I don't think that's anything that's strange to us or alien.
It was just part of your normal life routine, I guess.
Exactly. So moving into the work environment, I didn't really expect anything different.
Has anyone actually ever said to your face, you know, and if not, good, I guess, in a way, I don't know if that's good or bad, you know, I'd rather someone say it, but have they said, no, I don't want you because of your skin colour? Is that something that ever happened?
Definitely in both Paris and Milan, any black model will tell you. To be honest, I haven't been in like a couple of years now, but any black model will tell you, especially during Fashion Week, you'll be turned away from multiple places just because you're black.
My gosh.
I mean, I've definitely been turned away from a casting in Milan and they just said, we're not taking black models. Like, I don't know why your agency sent you here.
What would you say is better? Would you rather have heard that, or would you rather have heard, you're not fitting our fits right now?
I would prefer to hear this. Yeah. I would prefer for you to just tell me to my face.
Yeah.
So that you can hear what you're saying as well.
Yes, that's very true. When you've done shoots in the past, so recently I was reading this article and Gabrielle Union, it was on the BBC, I think she is putting a complaint to NBC, I believe. I had to fact check all this, about how when she was in America's Got Talent, she felt discriminated against. And she said a lot of the artists, makeup artists and stylists were not of colour or didn't even have the skills to do hair and makeup for someone of colour, such as herself. Have you ever been in that sort of position where you've got into a shoot and this stylist just have not been able to, you know, style you appropriately?
I think style is not usually the issue. Styling is not usually the issue. But the hair and makeup is definitely an issue every single time.
Every
single time. I could count on one hand the number of times where I've had a hair or makeup artist who knows how to work with darker skin or like afro hair.
Mm.
But I can count that on one hand. I've been doing this for 5 years.
Yeah, that's
so that should give you an indication.
Yeah,
like to the point where I'd rather take my own. I'd rather take my own products, definitely for hair.
Mm-hmm.
They have absolutely no clue when it comes to hair, most of the time. Yeah.
So you know, I go to work personally, mm-hmm. and I have a laptop and everything that I need to do my job. I'm finding it difficult to understand why you have to go in and take your own products because they don't have what you need to do your job. Do you see what I'm saying here? Like,
I get what you're saying, and I agree. But at the end of the day, if the images don't come out how the best way they can, that's a bad advertisement for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather take whatever I need with me and make sure that I look the best I can.
Mm-hmm.
So the next time, so that when these images come out, I can use them to get the next job.
Yes.
Rather than pointing the finger at someone else.
Mm. And like you said, you are self-employed. This is on exactly. you to yeah. make your money and make your next job available. How diverse would you say the modelling industry is from what you've seen in the past 2 years? Is it becoming more?
I would definitely say that I've seen an uptick in the number of black and minority ethnic models since I started, and it's really encouraging. It is really encouraging. It really wasn't like this before. I always felt like one of the only black people in the room, but I feel like that's something that's changing now.
Hmm.
I mean, it's still got a long way to go, but I'm definitely happy with the way that it's the direction it's moving in, at least.
Hmm. How are they actually implementing this? Like, do you see agent? Is it from the agency side, or are the magazines and the publications, are they the ones asking for it, or who's asking for this change, would you say? Who's driving it?
The thing is, at the end of the day, agencies are agents.
Mm.
They connect people to clients. So if the client doesn't want black models, the agency has no use for black models.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it has to start from the client. And I think change is like seeing Virgil Abloh at Louis Vuitton and using far more black models in his show than were previously used. And I'm seeing all these like global fashion houses like Dior and Prada, even brands like Hugo Boss using more and more black models to front their campaigns. All of that signals to agencies that, look, we do want black models. We're not just, we want them here. We want them to represent our brands. And that tells the agents, and that triggers the agencies to go and find more black models, or, you know, definitely push harder for their black models.
Yeah. Okay. One of my last questions I wanted to ask was about just being black in Europe in general. Because that's something that I always say to my friends, it's something that I actually find quite tough. I obviously have lived and been brought up in the UK, but when I go abroad to Europe, I find things a bit more hostile than I do here.
Yeah.
I mean, there might be racism here still. Maybe I just don't hear about it, or maybe just where I am is fine or better. But
yeah.
How have you dealt with it? Because you've not only have you studied in Europe, but you've also travelled for jobs as well. Yeah. How have you found that?
I really feel like my first few years in the Czech Republic gave me a thick skin. It was a baptism of fire at first. Like every single time you get on the bus, everybody turns around. You're waiting at the post office, everybody's like looking at you. Everybody's just looking at you.
Mm.
And I couldn't even call it racism. It's just ignorance. If you've never left this small city in the Czech Republic, then that means you've never seen a black person before. And I might stare if I was in their shoes.
Mm.
So that was another thing. It again comes back to this not taking things personally. That's not an attack on me, Efosa.
Mm.
It's a representation of the environment in which they grew up. And what they know.
Mm. Very true.
So yeah, I think that's one thing that definitely made it easier for me to
travel just... in the future as well.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guess once you go for, yeah, like you said, baptism of fire, once you've done that, nothing is sort of water and ducks back, whatever comes next, right?
Mm.
Oh. Thanks for sharing that with us. That's so, I think, especially during this time, things are so tense, as you know, on social media. The past few days have been so intense. No one should have to see that, number one, but when you see it so many times, it really starts to impact you. And you think, I can't keep watching this, like, blatant disregard and, like...
For human life.
Yeah, of humanity. It's disgusting. So, I definitely see that. I feel some tension right now, I have to be honest, in the whole world, not just, like, in the UK or America, the whole world. I feel like there's a lot of tension, and I really just hope that something moves, you know?
And it's just the question of what moves? Like, where does the movement take place?
Mm.
Because I've recently seen a lot of people saying, oh, you shouldn't loot Target, or basically debates around the fact that people are looting Target stores in... like across America.
Mm.
And some people were saying, I don't understand why people are looting Target. And some people saying, listen, these corporations have the power to speak up.
Yes.
They have the power to represent, to say they don't stand for what happened.
Mm.
And until corporations start doing that and some people start losing money, they don't see the need to take a stand. And I think the same goes for even modeling agencies. If you can't stand up and condemn what's happening in the world, why should black people help to keep your company afloat?
Yep. So true. So true. Everyone, especially those with a platform, they need to start, talking, especially if you've used your platform, I guess, to engage with black culture. And if you've used black culture in the past, I really think this is your time where you need to now use that same platform you used back then to speak up.
Yeah, like exactly.
I'm so pro that. Last quick question. BAME. Is there any sort of BAME community, or, you know how in some organisations they'll have a BAME group where you can join, there's events.
Yeah.
Is there anything of a sort in the general industry? I know this is hard because it's not like you're all in like, school of modeling together, you know what I mean? Anything like that?
I wouldn't say, not really as such. And I think that stems from the fact that there were so few black models in the industry that everybody felt like they were in competition with each other. Because there are unlimited jobs for, let's say, white models, but black models were boxed into this particular category of, say, sportswear or whatever. And if that's the case, then all of us need to get these 5 jobs.
Yes.
So we're not friends.
Of course.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that is changing now. Now that jobs are becoming more, black models are becoming a bit more ubiquitous in the modeling industry and are getting a lot of different kinds of jobs. You do see a more of a coming together,
yeah.
But I definitely think that's a process, and it's not a process that's complete at this stage.
Mm. Wow. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
I hope they do complete it. That would be quite nice, I think. Like, I think I would love to even see if it was like, you know, if I had that in Instagram and it's like, this is the BAME for all the black models, and like, Naomi was there, and like, oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
I should tweet that. Will you start one? Okay, let's move on to the penultimate section of Black Ladder Podcast. So we're back with part 4. And this is where I'm going to ask if Foster to leave some top tips and advice. So, you know, you've climbed your career ladder as a full-time model for a few years now. And so what I'm going to ask you is, as you're on this ladder, you look back down... What are the top tips and advice you'd like to leave for somebody who, I think you said you got scouted at age 20, right?
20, yeah. Which is quite old for a model, actually.
Is it? Okay, so somebody aged between 17 and 20 wants to be a model. What advice and tips are you giving them? I guess, what would you have wanted to hear when you first started out?
I don't know if it's what I would have wanted to hear, but it's what I needed to hear. I would say a few things. One, know who you are. And I realize that's a really broad, sweeping statement, but it is the most important thing. That means know your values, know what you will and won't compromise on, and know what you want to get out of it. If you want to be a model just because you think it looks cool and you think it's going to make you famous and you think you're going to earn loads of money without doing any work, it's probably not. You're going to get very frustrated very quickly. So I think that's number one. I think, to be honest, that is the most important one by far. Yeah. Like, know who you are, know what you want, know what you don't want. Often those things are just as important as each other. So,
what about if they want, like, some advice on finding and picking an agency? Because to me, from our chat, it sounds like you got quite a good relationship with yours. What advice would you give someone to make sure they get in touch and have the right agency for them?
In terms of mother agency, you just have to, that's a journey you have to go on, because you have to trust that person essentially with your life. That might sound a bit dramatic, but for a lot of people, their only job is being a full-time model. So you are literally trusting that person with your livelihood and that they will help you make the right decisions so that you can keep on earning consistently. So I think for a mother agency, it's finding someone that you can trust, like look them in the eye, meet them, look at their track record, see what they... speak to people who are already with them, who are already represented by them, just to get a feel for what kind of person they are. And I think that's definitely what I would do for my mother agency. And to be honest, if you trust your mother agent to help you make decisions, then the rest of the agencies won't be a problem.
True, because they will influence that. If you like them, they won't give you something rubbish.
Exactly.
I guess what would be great is, obviously, we've had such a really good conversation. It's been so interesting. And there are people out there who would love to get in touch with you and know more about modelling. Or somebody might even want to know about going to Czech Republic and studying general medicine. Where can people find you? Where can they get in touch? What are your socials?
So I only use Instagram at the moment. And that's at EFOS. FOS.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I will obviously link that in the details and in the on the promo that I put out as well. So please do contact Afosa. He's so nice and very, and when you know, even when he's on a flight, he will pick up your call when he comes off that flight. I think you have so much advice, and I think it's, I just love that you are, you know, you're, I, especially at the start, I don't know if anyone noticed when I asked your name and I wanted you to say it that way, and you did, you said doctor, and I was like, yes, that's what I wanted to hear, because I love people using their titles correctly. So I think it's great that you're doing both. It's, they're so, they're almost quite different career paths, but you know, you're doing it and you're doing them fantastically. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. Don't forget to share and subscribe to the Black Ladder podcast. It's available on all podcast platforms.